We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
This is In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots podcast. It's all Pelicans, all the time. And welcome to the pod. Since our last podcast, the Pelicans went 3-1, and I don't, for the life of me, remember who picked that. Did you pick 3-1?
I did.
I think you did.
I had faith.
Did I go 2-0 or did I go 4-0? 2-0. 2-2 or 4-0? I don't know. Clearly, I was wrong and you were right.
We were both right, even if we weren't.
Okay.
Yeah, winning the back-to-back-to-back.
Yep.
First team since, like, 1979 or something like that to win 3 back-to-back-to-back games at home. Quite a feat.
And they were... They had to, other than the Mavericks game, which never was really that close, they really had to work to dig those other two games out, Pacers and Lakers. So which of those two was more impressive to you, beating the Lakers by 3 or the Pacers by 4?
I'd say that Pacers game, because they won it with defense. They were really off that game offensively. Indiana did some things to give them some issues. Drew was coming back from being sick, and then you just get that out-of-nowhere game from the struggling Etuan Moore. All of a sudden, he just goes nuts, and then you have a couple other guys help patch it together. I thought Diallo gave him some big minutes, but, I mean, you look at that game, and you could probably say AD had a good game, Moore definitely had a good game, and then Diallo gave you 20 good minutes. And other than that, the rest of your team struggled, and you still found a way to win. Those are always the most impressive to me.
Yeah. Here's what I would say about that game. Some people I've seen are a little bit down on Drew because he hasn't played particularly well the past few games. Like, the guy missed a game with flu-like symptoms and then came back and had to have an IV in this game. He hasn't had a whole lot of rest the past few games. Let's see how he looks Portland before we decide that, you know, he's not really up to snuff anymore. Okay. I think he's going to be okay.
I think the issue is that we've seen this from Drew in the past where he gives us glimpses and teases us and we get all excited and then he returns back to Earth. I think that's the issue. I think if he had given us over the last couple of years solid, steady performance, and then was struggling a little bit, we wouldn't be worried. I think that the worry comes from, we've seen the story before where he gives us a month or two of all-star level basketball and then comes down to earth. So I think it comes more from that than, you know, just these couple of games in particular. And I'll be honest, I don't think we'll ever see the Jrue Holiday from the beginning of the season again, but I'll honestly be pretty surprised if he plays well in the playoffs. I mean, I think the formula is there to stop him. I don't know why teams are really pressing him hard, 25, 28 feet away from the basket. Like, he's just become a worse and worse 3-point shooter. I don't know why you just don't play off him at this point, and I think some of the smarter teams are going to start to. So we'll see how he is, but I kind of get the worrying about Jrue Holiday because we've just seen the story before.
Yeah. So I've been super impressed with Jrue Holiday this year. I've been super impressed with his defense. I loved what he did to Oladipo in that game against the Pacers. I got to say, though, Oladipo, this season, I've only seen two Pacers games. Oladipo, when he's, you know, not carrying all of the offensive load himself, he's as good as Jrue defensively. I think Oladipo is a pretty special player. Like, I don't know. Are you impressed with Oladipo or not?
Yeah, I think he's a rare player. Especially in today's NBA, I think, defensively, I think should be an all NBA type of member. And then offensively, he just has a game that's hard to stop. Like, he almost has the game of like a scrub who has to try hard to stay in the league. Always high motor. He'll attack the offensive glass. He'll shoot from the outside. He'll create a playoff ball. I'm a big fan, and I'm just wondering, like, when you think it will be in their careers where Oladipo is clearly the superior player over Paul George, because I don't think it's there yet, but I don't think Paul George has another level, and if anything, he'll start coming down. I'm so curious how that trade's going to look 5-8 years from now.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even think it's got to be that much further. I would say that Oladipo is better offensively than George is right now. Not a lot better, but slightly better. And so George's really advantage is that he's more versatile defensively. Like, Oladipo can take point guards and shooting guards and fight them to the death. George can take 1 through 4 and do the same thing. So it's really, what do you need a little bit more of? A more versatile switching player who can cover a lot of different places? Or do you need a guy who's got a little bit more off-the-dribble game than George does?
Yeah, let me ask you, in that game, in that Pacers game, are you surprised that we won the overall rebounding battle? Because I thought that was somewhere that Indiana could have killed us, and there was just so many contributions from so many different guys. Like, even Darius Miller getting 4 rebounds, obviously not something that he's accustomed to do. Are you starting to trust this team a little more on the boards with kind of a group rebounding effort, or do you think the right team could still just absolutely destroy us there?
No, I think the right team can absolutely destroy us there. And I'll be honest, I think the overall rebounding battle, I think it's a little bit of fool's gold here. Like, the Pelicans had a ton of opportunities to grab defensive rebounds because the Pacers shot so horrendously the entire game. So I don't know. If you said I had to take one, the Pacers or the Pelicans, and say take one of their rebounding stats for like a fantasy league or something like that, I don't know. I'd probably still take the Pacers just in general.
Yeah. Yeah, the other thing that stood out to me here was, like, I think it's such a useful tool coming down the stretch. So our two big men were 14 of 14 from the free throw line. Boogie's a good free throw shooter. Mirotic's pretty good. I just, it's so odd to me how backwards this team is in that one particular space. I think with a fully healthy roster, it's probably the front court players that I trust the most from the line, with the exception of Ian Clark. But doesn't it feel so weird to you that, like, when our guards, our 6'4" and under guards, step up to the line, like, you're expecting a miss? Like, Moore is a bad free throw shooter. Holiday, like, I still don't understand why they have Holiday on the court at the end of games when we're trying to ice it with free throws. And then Rondo's bad, but, like,
Holiday at least has a history of being able to hit free throws at the end of games. Now, this season, he's been pretty awful. At least he has a history of being able to do it before. Like, yeah, but Rondo and Moore, and they're just bad.
Yeah, like, I mean, you could really, if you get Boogie back and you get a team that could just be in the bonus all the time, now you get one or two other perimeter players who could actually make free throws. Like, it's so obvious that this could be the team's offensive identity, that you could just get 25 free throws and, you know, you got big men who could actually hit them, and then just go out and get one wing or one guard and you're golden. But, yeah, that was the other thing that struck me from this game, is just how clutch those two and then Clark were from the free throw line when they absolutely needed them. But, yeah, that Pacers win was the most impressive, just because I felt like they had nothing to give that game, and that was a game that the Pacers could have, you know, went on a 6 or 8-0 run, and that would have been enough to pull away. But Pelicans stayed in it with defense and then just grinded out a win that they probably had no business getting.
Yeah. Hey, but so you weren't impressed by the fact that they then went up against the Lakers, who went to run, and were able to stick with them? Or is the Lakers' defense just so awful, or the fact that Lonzo had an awful shooting night, is that what kept us in that game?
See, I don't think running makes an NBA athlete tired. I think running up and down the court and then getting battered and bruised and pounded. Like, if those two games were switched, the Lakers game were first and then Indiana would have been last, even though it would have been a slow-paced game, I think the Pelicans would have just thrown in the towel in that game. I actually like the way the order set up, because, I mean, these guys are athletes. It's not the running up and down the court that wears them out. It's when you're every time up and down the court, it's just body on body banging in the paint and getting grabbed and having to make your way around picks and stuff. So I actually think the Lakers were the perfect team to play kind of in that last of the back-to-back-to-back. And I tweeted out after the game, like, that was literally the first day I was glad that God brought LeVar Ball into existence, because without his child in that game, I don't know how the Pelicans could have won. But thank you, Lonzo Ball, for all the gifts that you gave us.
Yeah. So just I thought I should mention this so everybody can roll their eyes. If the New Orleans Pelicans were in the Eastern Conference, they'd have clinched a playoff spot.
I think they have already.
I mean, they would have clinched it after that Lakers game. They would have been in the playoffs guaranteed. But you think they have already? You think there's no way the New Orleans Pelicans fall out of the Western Conference playoffs?
They would have to lose every game except for the two gimmies. So I got Phoenix and Memphis as gimmies. So they would have to go.
Memphis is real close to knocking off Minnesota right now as we speak.
They got it won, yeah. But, I got those as virtual gimmies, and so they would have to go 0-6 in the other ones, in my opinion, to miss it. I think they're pretty much in. But, yeah, we could play the Western Conference game. We could do it every year. What I'm curious about is if 3 or 4 years from now, if fans are going to want this Pelicans team to be in the Eastern Conference, because they might have the juggernauts at that point by then. So I'd just wait out this Western Conference thing.
All right, well, who do you think are the Eastern Conference juggernauts? Philadelphia?
Yeah, if Fultz becomes anything, and then they land one more free agent, which they eventually will, them, and then, you know, if Boston keeps building what they're building, Indiana is actually going to have some cap space. So, yeah, I wouldn't expect the disparity for it. I think Houston's going to sign Chris Paul to some massive contract, and a couple years from now they'll be regretting that. So, yeah, the whole West is coming down. We'll be the only ones left standing.
That's right. Because, yes, was it? Curry turned 30 just a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, over the hill.
Yeah, forget about it. Just might as well. Like, that was one of the. So I used to listen to the Dunked On podcast all the time. And it's so predictable and so just repetitive now that I just can't really stomach it anymore. But I did listen to, because he had a guest I actually wanted to listen to. And at one point he's talking about how oh, well, this team won't be so good in 2019 because this player will be in his age 31 season and will be then on the downside. It's like he never, like, he's read somewhere that, hey, at age 27 is the prime year. And 27 and 28 are where you're going to have your best numbers. And so that anything after that must be bad, as if there isn't some sort of curve there. Like, no player can actually have a curve that starts at age 25 and extends to 33 or anything like that. Like, in the same breath, he's talking about Chris Paul, who's what, 35 now? And is still a top 10 NBA player? Arguably.
Yeah. Yeah, but
I don't know. Do you think Paul's 10? He's probably top 15. I don't know if I'd say 10 anymore.
I never know how to answer that quick because it's, I mean, once you get to certain tiers, it depends on what your team needs. So yeah. If you got Westbrook on your team, no, I'd rather have Kawhi. But if you've got, you know, Durant on your team, I'd rather have Chris Paul than Kawhi. Like, it all gets stupid at that point. But,
Kawhi doesn't even play anymore, man.
Oh, he
gets called out by Tony Parker, who's 87 years old, and uses the cane.
He just doesn't want to play for Pop, that tyrant.
that's right, because Pop has a history of being an awful coach. Awful.
Yeah. Yeah, but that, I mean, that Lakers game was interesting. I mean, to me, the interesting one was Rondo, and those two games just show me, like, look, I'm excited as anybody that the Pelicans are going to make the playoffs, and I think it's great what they accomplished and yada, yada, yada. And I'll probably come off sounding pessimist on this pod, but like those two games showed me that it's all going to depend on the matchup, what Rondo is going to be in the playoffs. Cause he was just awful against Indiana, and Indiana's a playoff team and they're a physical team and they're, you know, a good defensive team. And the Lakers are not a playoff team for a reason. And they just kind of give you your space, and Rondo looked great in that game. And I just, you know, I think people are going to be in for a rude awakening when they see what this Pelicans offense looks like in a playoff series.
Maybe. It all depends on who they're playing against. I'm not convinced that there's anybody on Portland's team who can slow them down, like not in the backcourt.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see. I do think that is the best matchup for Rondo, but yeah,
we have to talk about it, though, because so did you grin like an idiot when he was just poking at Isaiah Thomas nonstop in that game?
Oh, yeah. And then when he got Isaiah to get the tech and started clapping and yelled,
throw him out of here.
That was the best. That was the best part of the game. That might have been the best part of the season.
I just like the way he just got him going so bad in the previous game and so easily baited him in this one. It made my day. And then the fact that, like, he went for 24-10 on Isaiah Thomas and, became playoff Rondo all of a sudden. And maybe the reason why he was playoff Rondo last year for the Bulls was because he was going against Isaiah Thomas. Could there be some sort of correlation there?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely gets him fired up. I need Isaiah to be on the opposite team from us in the playoffs. But, yeah, that was my favorite part of that game by far. I mean, I like Rondo. I really do. I think he brings so much to this team. The record is obvious when he's on the team, and he has his bad nights. He has his bad matchups. But again, he's a $3 million a year player. He shouldn't be a stud in every game and every matchup. I just thought he was terrific in that Lakers game, and it's just all going to come down to the matchups with him. Diallo, you look at the stat line, he scored 2 points in that game, did not have a field goal, but he was actually in during crunch time, one, because Mirotić sucked again, but two, because Randall was probably the hardest guy for the Pelicans to handle, and Diallo really used his length and stopped him a couple of times down the stretch. I thought his defense was really big, and I think even beyond that, being on the court closing out a game, really shows a big step up for him.
Yeah, I've been very impressed with Diallo. He still is clearly got a long way to go, but he's just starting to make better reads defensively and making the right rotations when he's in a position to be on ball. So I'm not saying he's really good at, hey, on the weak side, there's some action going on and he's supposed to be paying attention and he tracks the right guy. He's not really that good at that yet. And there's players on this team that have been in the NBA for 10 years and they're still really not that good at that yet. But when he is supposed to be deciding how to defend a pick and roll and he is one of the guys involved, he's making the right decisions almost every time, which is pretty good.
Yeah, so, I get some hope for him next year.
Let me ask you something about the Lakers. And I'm going to take Dang off the table because I know that's who you'd go for. If you could take one guy from the Lakers and bring him over to the Pelicans, who is it?
I think it'd probably be Kuzma, just because I think he'd be satisfied with lower usage for most of the season, and then when I needed him, he could amp it up and go out and score for me. But I think he could hit the open three. He's smart enough. He doesn't need high usage. He'd be a good enough defender. I think he has good basketball IQ. So, like, in a vacuum, Brandon Ingram's the answer, especially if you're looking at long-term. But Kuzma, to me, like, if somehow we could go back and do the draft and just trade it up further and gotten Kuzma, like, this team's future would be incredibly bright, because that's the exact small forward, a guy who could go for 30 on a night if I need him and one of my big men is sitting out, or he could be a lower usage guy and do other things. God, he would just be such a perfect fit on this team. Plus, you'd have him on that contract. Like, if you could go back in time, you trade up. I mean, first you trade up and try to get Donovan Mitchell, but if you can't get that far, you get to 25 or 26 and grab Kuzma, and this team's future would be incredibly bright. What yeah. about you? Who do you like?
You took my answer. Kuzma's the guy. And I was actually expecting you to say Brandon Ingram. Damn you. Damn you. I'm sure there's some people who watched that game and probably would have said Julius Randle. And I don't know, Randle, he might be, he just feels like he's destined to be at best Anton Jameson, who had to be able to go to teams and be a sixth man for his teams to be successful.
Yeah, I think that's Randall's perfect role, is a six-man offense, like a guy who gives you 19 points and 23 minutes off the bench.
Just a bowling ball.
Yeah, a Jamal Crawford, but a big man.
Yeah. Anybody else on that team you like? Caldwell Pope? If they could get Caldwell Pope, would you want him?
I mean, in this game, he looked like a god, but overall,
no. That was ridiculous. He had a career 34% shooting from three, and he looked like a god against us.
Yeah, that was frustrating, but Lonzo balanced it out. The guy that I'm so curious about, I would love to know what his career is going to look like the next 2 or 3 years. And obviously he wouldn't fit on this team because of personality and fit or whatever. But I would love to just have an Isaiah Thomas type off the bench for this team next year, where we could just rest both of our bigs, or, you know, what, somebody could just go out and score a bunch of buckets like that. Again, I know he wouldn't come here with Boogie and Rondo and all that, but I really wouldn't mind a player like that next year who could just go get me 12 points in a quarter.
I think you're 2 seasons away from being able to do something like that. And what I mean by that is there are certain guys who think that their role is a starter and an all-star and a star. And they may be able to reach something similar to that level for a season or a two, but they're never going to maintain it, and they're going to always end up being a good bench player. And I think that's what Isaiah Thomas should be going forward. Like, he's still got a scoring knack, but like, we saw people take him apart. And unless he is scoring at an ungodly efficiency, he's just not that good. So, I don't know. I think in 2 years he'll reach the point where he starts to recognize that, hey, maybe I shouldn't be getting massive contracts and be the starter on my team.
Yeah, yeah, he still won't come to a team with Boogie on it, but I agree. and then obviously Travis Ware. Like, we want that. It's so funny when you see a guy on a court that just doesn't look like he belongs on the court.
Yeah.
Like, usually it's because they're wearing, like, some random number. Like, they're wearing number 87 late in March, and you're like, okay, this guy. But Travis Ware, like, the second I saw him on the court, like, he just does not look like an NBA player. He stuck out like a sore thumb. Buried a couple threes, but, yeah, did not look like an NBA player to my eyes.
Yeah, he has real Ryan Bowen style.
Mm. Right, I think Ryan Bowen was more like Midwest. Like, Travis Ware is the El Segundo, like the Southern California Ryan Bowen.
Yeah, Ryan Bowen would walk around with plaid shirts and stuff. Yeah, he was definitely Midwest man.
I'll never forget, he showed up to, like, CP3's black tie affair birthday party in a freaking, what are they called, lumberjack shirt.
Yes. So, just talking about NBA scrubs, you know what one of the most impactful, like, images I've seen is a shirtless Sean Marks. Because Sean Marks was like the epitome of your third string center who probably shouldn't ever play, and if he does play, you're a terrible team. But he floated around from team to team to team just as a stopgap. And you'd think of this guy as like a completely not physical specimen. He's a stiff. He's not much of a center. And there was a picture that I found and I put on some blog post a long time ago just as a joke. And the dude is ripped. Like, he had muscles and veins that stood out in them, and it was freakish. And this is the kind of guy who is a slub in the NBA. And I realize that I am so far away from being an NBA athlete, I might as well be, like, another species. It's crazy.
Yeah, like, my wife this weekend was like, which one would you rather do if you could be in the league tomorrow, MMA or NFL? I'm like, are you high? Like, what are you talking about? Like, I'd get killed. You put me in for 1 second. You make me the punter and I die. Like, what are you talking about? I agree. And speaking of NBA schlub, I don't think I ever told you this story. The most random – so I used to be like an autograph hound in the mid to late 90s, and I would just go to all these things. I went to a big man camp, and like Alonzo was there and David Robinson and – Shaq and like all of these places, and we're all these like elite guys, and we're all outside waiting for autographs. And I'll never forget, this woman just came up crazy and she was all excited, and she's like, you know, she's like, I can't wait to meet him again. Like, she's just talking on and on about how she's been planning this trip for weeks, and she can't believe she's finally going to get to meet him. And we're like, who are you waiting for? And her answer was Larry Krystkowiak. Like, it blew my mind. Like, the greatest players in the world were there, and yet somebody was there obsessing about Larry Krystkowiak. And I guess I always wondered if she got to meet him. But, yeah, that's my one NBA scrub encounter, is I met a Larry Krystkowiak groupie.
It is weird. Like, we've had a lot of real fringe NBA players who have ended up on the Pelicans, Hornets teams. And some of them, like, come with fans. Like, I can understand Jimmer Fredette fans. Like, he had a storied career in college. He was an exciting player to watch in college. If you really liked him then, maybe you can follow him around the NBA and still be like, I support that dude. I'm riding with him all the way. But there are guys who, like, they didn't even have impressive college careers, and still they have just these fans that are crazy. And if you say anything bad about them, you get blasted in email and comments and forums. It's crazy. Just the weird, weird world of sports.
Well, that's going to be me for Charles Cook in 6 years. I'll be the one fan left. People will never remember he existed, and I'll still be hunting him down. All right, so back to the game. I mean, then obviously got their butt kicked by Houston, and this was a game that they probably should have rested anyway, and it was just, what was this? This was their seventh game in, what was it, 10 nights or something crazy like that, 11 nights?
Yeah.
But this is what I want to talk about overall, is this team is 43-31 now. At one point, they were 20-20, so obviously they've gone, what, 23-11 over this stretch. They've had the 10-game win streak. They've had a couple 3-4-game win streaks. Looking at this team since Boogie went down, and we could look at all the wins they've gotten, and then even more specifically, they're, what, 13-5 in their last 18? So last 18 games, 13-5, congratulations. A lock for the playoffs, and it looks like, you know, they weren't going to make it. I mean, when they were 28-26 after that loss against Minnesota, if you would have told me it was going to take 46, 47 wins to get in, I would say they were done. But they're probably going to get in now. Are they playing good basketball is not the right word, but are they playing like a team good enough to win a playoff series, or would they have to play better or much better than we've seen over these even last 18 games for them to have a shot at winning an actual playoff series?
So I think you said, so you got to talk about what the scenario is here. You said this before, that teams 3-10 in the Western Conference, and maybe you can say 4-10 if you particularly like one team or another. The difference between them isn't that dramatic. You're never going to be going into any of these series saying, oh, it's a 65% lock for one team or the other. They're all going to be like a 55-45, and matchups are going to matter dramatically. So in my opinion, they're definitely capable of winning a series against the kind of competition they're going to be going against. Do I think that they are a team that is a threat to any of the, you know, real top seeds? No. If they go against any top seed, they're going to get crushed. It's just that it's a different level. They're not a contender. They're not one of those teams like to be a real contender for a title, to make it to the conference finals, you know, routinely. Teams usually have to have like a 5-point differential, and they've been doing that for a couple of years, and generally they have pretty good success. And the Pelicans are nowhere near that. They're a team that made it in this year, and a small thing goes wrong next year, they're not making it in. And a small thing goes right next year, and they can catapult to 50 wins and probably have like a nice, you know, 3-point scoring margin. It still doesn't make them a contender. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I'm not even saying contender. I'm saying win a playoff series.
No, I think they could. I think they could win. I wouldn't make them. Would you make them favorites over anybody
that they're likely to play?
If it's not the Nuggets or the Clippers, and I don't know if the Timberwolves don't have Jimmy Butler, those are the only ones I would put them favorites over.
Yeah. Yeah, I just
think long and hard about the Spurs. I don't know how I feel about the Spurs.
I mean, we could probably look at their struggles in the regular season, but we just, I guess it boils down to this for me. Like, people judge how a playoff series is going to go based on the regular season, and I think, I just think that's absurd. I've watched enough basketball to know that it's almost two totally different sports. When you're going through the regular season, you're just trying to get through. You're doing what you do. Usually you have your fourth assistant. He's got a couple of teams he's scouting. He brings you the scouting report as a coach. You go over it real quick. You go over it with your players real quick. Nobody really plays hard until the last 5-6 minutes of the game, except for like the fringe rotation players who are trying to prove themselves. And like the playoffs is such a different sport. And I just think that any coach, like, I know I could put together a game plan that could stop this Pelicans team. Like, you don't even have to give me that good of a team. Like, this offense is going to be so incredibly easy to slow down and to negate. I struggle to imagine that 4 out of 7 times this team is going to be able to beat another playoff team. And, like, we talk about this 13-5 stretch. Okay, find me the impressive win over the team that is going to be similar to a team that we play in the playoffs. Like, you won't be able to. And when we go against real playoff teams, like the Philly team, the Utah team that beat us twice, like, we get our butts handed to us. Like, you look at the playoff teams that we beat. Okay, you beat San Antonio with Kawhi out. LaMarcus Aldridge is out for the second half. Pop gets ejected. And then you find a way to battle back from like 18 down to win that one. The most shorthanded Celtics team possible. Like, where are these wins that you're like, yes, there's a win against a team that's similar to what we're going to face in a playoff series? I just don't see it. I see Pistons, I see Lakers twice, I see, you know, Suns, I see Mavericks, I see even the teams that are kind of good, okay, at the Clippers, but they were shorthanded that game. But yeah, that was a fine win, but you're not playing the Clippers in the playoffs. I'm really happy for what they did this season, but I think people are starting to set themselves up for fairly unrealistic expectations if they think they're going to win a series or even like get it to 7. I just don't see that.
Yeah, I'm not going to disagree. And there's also the fact that, you know, much is made of the fact that the Pelicans have been winning all these close games. Like, they have a great record in overtime games. Well, you know, in general, that doesn't always go your way. There's a few teams that have consistently been able to do that game after game. But I watched all those overtime games, and it didn't feel to me like they were dominating them and just executing the opponent. It felt like they got lucky on a bunch of tip-ins and final and last plays. So it's just the Pelicans have a point differential, which is almost neutral. And they are the 10th best point differential in the Western Conference right now. So they are winning a lot of these close games, and they're finding ways to grind out and win, and maybe that will help them win a game or two in the playoffs if that is something that they're just learning how to execute. Or Davis is just so amazing that even if they execute it terribly, he can clean it up and still score for them, which we have seen. But they're not a dominant team in any way, shape, or form, and they're just as likely to lose in the first round as they are to win in the first round, in my opinion. So, but you seem to think that let me ask you the question: if you're putting a percentage on it, any team Western Conference, the Pelicans are the 6th seed, so Portland, OKC, Spurs, any of them end up in the third spot, what are you giving them odds? Like, what percentage are they winning?
15 to 20% chance.
Wow.
Like, okay. They have no experience. Like,
but you're acting like those teams don't have flaws. Like, yes, the Pelicans have flaws. All of these teams in this tier have flaws.
Yeah, they also have playoff experience. They also, I mean, I just feel like all of those teams could either go to another level or they're already at a higher level. Like, I think the Pelicans, people are going to say, man, they really played worse in the play. Like, what we see in third quarters, I think is going to happen to them for the majority of the game. Because what happens in third quarters, the Pelicans don't go into the locker room and eat bad food and come out with food poisoning, and Gentry doesn't tell them to do something stupid and that's why they suck. What happens is teams go in and make adjustments, and then they come out, and then the Pelicans can't score because you know why? Because their roster as currently constructed kind of sucks when you need to score the basketball. I can't tell you how incredibly easy this team would be to stop if you just gave me average personnel. So what happens is teams just kind of play the first half, then they go in and they go, hey, it'd be really easy to stop them if we just did this, this, and this. And then all of a sudden the Pelicans can't score in the third quarter. Well, that's going to happen throughout an entire playoff series because the team is going to be ready for them. And then by, like, halftime of game one, they're going to see how easy it is to stop them. And then they get to play them again two nights later and then two nights later, and they're just going to keep that game plan. And there's nothing the Pelicans are going to be able to do to adjust. Like, Darius Miller's not all of a sudden going to become a great off-the-bounce scorer. All of these guys with these fatal flaws offensively aren't going to be able to fix them during the playoff series. And I just think it's going to be incredibly easy to stop this team, where I think other teams could go to another level, or with a team like Portland, they're not just that easy to stop, just because you're scouting them more.
Okay.
Like, what's the Pelicans' offensive efficiency right now? Right now, they're at...
Last I looked, they were like 10th or 11th.
Yeah, they're dropping. I'm telling you, teams are figuring... So they're 13th now. Weren't they in the top five for a while?
I think for a very brief time. I think they... Ever since Boogie went down, they've been dropping. But almost at the exact same rate, they've also been improving defensively, which is not surprising if you think about what happened there.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, they're at 109, right? I mean, people are just going to think that they choked in the postseason because their offense is going to look like crap, but I'm telling you, this offense is incredibly easy to stop if you're focused on it as opposed to, the course of the regular season where you're just trying to survive as a team. So, unless they run into like a really dumb coaching staff or maybe a stubborn one that doesn't want to change the way they do things, or a staff that goes, no, let's let AD get his and we'll shut it. Like, unless they run into a really dumb staff or the team they play just starts racking up a bunch of injuries during the series, I think this offense is going to look terrible in the playoffs.
Okay, we'll see.
but I would say that they could prove me wrong over these next couple games. I think this three-game stretch coming up, like if you tell me what what their record is going to be in this three-game stretch, I think I could tell you what seed they get. And I think this is a massive, massive three-game stretch with Portland at Cleveland and Oklahoma City. I mean, you got Memphis and Phoenix right after that, so you could really go on a little winning streak here if you could pull off some of these. Or if you go 2-1, you're basically going to go 4-1 over the next five, and you could really start talking about home court advantage or at least avoiding Golden State and Houston. I think this three-game stretch is absolutely massive.
Right, so... home versus Portland at Cleveland, home versus Oklahoma City. Before we talk about any of them, just knee-jerk, Which of those is the hardest one?
I would say Cleveland, just because the other ones are like in the midst of a road stretch. Like Portland just had a very emotional, physical game against Oklahoma City yesterday, so now they'll be in a road stretch. Oklahoma's in the middle. That game will be in the middle of a just absolutely brutal stretch for them. So both teams will kind of like just be worn down. Cleveland's going to be at home. Kevin Love is fresh legs and LeBron has turned on the switch. That would be the game that would surprise me the most in some way if the Pelicans won. But then again, that's the type of team I love when the Pelicans play, just soft teams that really go up and down, and then it just becomes a who makes more shots contest. But that's the one that I think is the toughest.
Okay. Yeah. If it was in Portland, I would say the Portland game would be harder. But since both the Portland and OKC games are not in their home courts, I was going to say Cleveland too. Just because it's just they are a good team who knows how to win, and their offense is really hard to stop. And I don't know, do you think the Pelicans are going to be able to keep up with a team that frequently challenged Golden State in scoring ability? I mean, I guess Irving's gone, so it's not really a good comparison anymore, but they do have some serious offensive power. So,
yeah, that one, and then what we've really got to root for is we just got to root for Dame's wife to go into labor tomorrow morning. That's what we need. I know
we're
not.
You've got a plane standing by. Standing by.
We're not allowed to root for injury because that just makes us terrible people. But the birth of a child, we could all root for that. That's glorious and good. So we need that to happen tomorrow. So if anybody knows how to induce, get it done for the team.
Yeah, I think that'd be grand. So let's say the entire Portland team shows up tomorrow. What are you thinking the Pelicans have to do to beat that team?
I think that game really comes down to Diallo, Mirotic, and Okafor, because the place where Portland really worries me, like their guards are going to get points, but when Nurkic and Ed Davis and all of those guys start crashing the boards and getting them extra possessions, that's just where they could be inefficient and then still end up beating you. Like, I've seen nights where McCollum and Lillard will, like, shoot under 40% collectively and they'll still win, and it's just because the volume and the number of opportunities. I think, you know, we could really give one or both of those guys problems and make them inefficient, but if they just keep pounding the boards like they've done in the past, I don't think it's going to matter. So to me, it's really Okafor and Diallo and Mirotic helping Davis out on the boards. That's the biggest place where I worry with that matchup.
Do you realize, are you, how surprising it is to use Diallo in that conversation? Like, that's how quickly things have changed.
Yeah, and I mean, I remember a game earlier this year up in Portland where they tried to play Diallo, and Ed Davis just made him look like a 16-year-old child. Like, he just pushed him around, got all these boards, or you know, and Ed Davis was the one who really sparked their second. You know, I want to say, I think AD got hurt in that, like, the game was close, and then AD went down or whatever, and then Diallo had to play, and Ed Davis just absolutely owned him. Or maybe Davis got hurt the game before. I don't remember.
Don't even go back that far. If 4 weeks ago I said there is a game against Portland at the end of March that we're going to rely on Diallo to be able to contribute on the boards.
And don't forget Okafor. I wouldn't have thought he was on the team.
You would have thought it was the other Okafor, probably.
Yeah. No, I mean, Diallo and Okafor, I think if Portland is the matchup in this game in a playoff series, like, those guys are really going to be the X factors, because I'm telling you, when Portland really kills you, you know, Lillard and McCollum are going to have off games. They're going to have their hot games too. But the reason Portland's defense is good is because they swallow up almost every defensive board. They're at almost 80% getting defensive boards, and then they could get extra possessions on the offensive board, and they don't turn the ball over. So, like, they have these two high-volume guards, which normally isn't a good recipe, but when you're getting that many more possessions than your opponent, you know, those type of guards will lead you to victory. So, yeah, to me, that's the biggest factor is can Diallo, Mirotić, and Okafor keep those guys off the boards, and can we have an equal number of possessions? Because I think if we can, you beat this Portland team 8 times out of 10, but they beat you if they're just killing you and finishing the game with 8, 10, 12 extra possessions than you are.
Yeah, can we just take a moment, and you mentioned his name several times, and mention just how absurd Ed Davis's rebounding numbers are. He's averaging 7.5 rebounds in only 19 minutes a game. You normalize him to a normal starter's minutes, and he's averaging 14. Like, that's crazy. Like, Alfred Camino, we all know him. We're all familiar with him. We saw him play for years, and we all know he's a good rebounder. Ed Davis matches his rebounding numbers in 11 less minutes a game. He plays a quarter less and gets the same number of rebounds.
Yeah, and his offensive rebound rate is 14.3, which I know there's probably not a lot of people who know what's a good number, what's a bad number. 14.3% offensive rebound.
Defensive.
Yeah, like that's elite, super elite offensive rebounding percentage. So, yeah, him, Nurkic is just another big – I mean, they do a lot of what you know, Tyreek used to do. They have these attacking guards, and then you've got to concentrate two or three men when they drive, and then their bigs are just there for the offensive glass. So that's where Portland really scares me. I know three-pointers going in and those guys getting hot, you know, are scary, and that'll happen some games it won't. But I'm telling you, like, their domination on the glass is where they would have the big advantage in a series against the Pelicans, and where, you know, they could win the game tomorrow night.
So you have the magic Drew Bullitt. And, you know, whenever you put him on a guard, he's going to probably reduce their effectiveness 15% or so. Which of these two guards receives the Drew Bullitt?
CJ McCollum for the first 42 minutes, Lillard for the last 6.
So you're playing Drew all 48
minutes? Well, no, I'm saying in theory, when Drew's on the court, he's on the court in the first 42 minutes of the game, he's on Lillard, but the last 6 minutes of the game, he's just making, or on McCollum, the last 6 minutes of the game, he's just making Lillard's life live in hell. I can't tell you how many games I've seen in the last couple of months where Lillard is so pedestrian through the first 3.5 quarters and then is just a god down the stretch. So that would be my strategy with Drew.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, the other thing I want to talk about for these games and just overall is, what has been your impression of Solomon Hill? Do you think he's going to be a positive down the stretch for the Pelicans, or is he basically just a guy taking up minutes and giving guys a breather here and there?
I'm going to have a really hard time saying he'll be a positive. I think he, you know, for 10 minutes a game, he can come in and be a defensive presence, if not excellent defensive presence. Like, he's going to come in and make some good plays, and he's going to come in and make some bad plays, and he's just going to be able to spot our guys some minutes. Like, I don't. He's not, unfortunately, going to be able to be the guy that we need him to be. We need a wing who can come in and guard the big guard or small forward for most of a game and be able to slow them down significantly. And then every once in a while make a shot so he's just not a complete non-entity. Like, his legs aren't under him. He's not making any long-range shots. I don't expect to see him make any anytime soon. I fully expect that he will have a miserable shooting percentage by the end of the season, but he'll be able to come in and contribute a little bit defensively, and I guess that's all we're going to see. Do you see anything different there?
No, I don't, and I'm, like, if they had the same exact contract, do you think Solomon Hill would be playing more than Liggett? Like, you need 10 minutes from a guy tonight. Who do you have more faith in, Liggins or Solomon Hill?
Liggins.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think they're playing him to try to get him back into shape, and because he's obviously more of a longer-term player for this franchise, but I don't think he's as good as Liggins right now, and I don't know if he will be by the time at any point during this season.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, it's still 3 weeks away from playoff time. Do you think that there's any chance he could be in good enough shape to be able to be something, a shadow of himself that's decent?
I don't think it's just the shape. I think it's the feel. I think it's the confidence. I think he feels so far behind the game right now, and, like, all these guys have, like, mentally gotten into shape over the course of the season. I think, like, this team is just, they're not practicing. They might have one practice a week. So I just don't know how he gets the reps, and I think it's more of a mental thing. That said, and I know they're different players, I saw Kevin Love just jump back in with the Cavs, and he looks fine.
But he's played this year. Like, he only was out for, what, 6 weeks? Yeah. Like, so.
Yeah.
I just ran on your parade. They re-signed Larry Drew to another 10-day contract, so maybe he's the answer.
Yeah. No, I'm just saying, like, I've seen guys come back. I mean, Middleton came back from this exact injury, and he was, like, not terrible. I feel like it's a mental thing with Hill. Like, things are going so well that he doesn't want to make a mistake. Like, I would have played him more in that Houston game that they had no chance of winning and just told him, go out there, make mistakes, let it fly. Like, whatever, we're going to lose this game anyway. But, like, you hear him in interviews, he's like, things are going so well, I'm trying not to get in the way or whatever. Like, you know, Kevin Love kind of came back to a situation where they were playing bad, so he didn't have to worry about that. I think Solomon Hill's just in his own head and trying not to mess things up. And this team does have such a small margin of error. I mean, even the games they win by 3 points. So he's kind of right. One bad possession that he has could be the difference between a win and a loss. So I find it hard that he's really going to get the reps and he's going to really get there mentally at any point this year.
Maybe what he can do for us is if he could just take away two of Mirotic's bad possessions, he'll be helping out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and there's plenty of those to go around. So,
Man, you soured on Mirotic. You soured on him.
I have no problem with the player. I can only evaluate how they play. I don't look to be upset or look to, like, he has played like dog crap. Once he plays good, I'll say he plays good. I don't care about them.
He's a nice defensive presence and presence on the board. He's useful. He's a threat.
He's useful because
he stretches the floor.
Yeah, he's useful in a world in which the alternatives are not good.
He's better than Jonte Cunningham? Oh, come on. Just stop.
I mean, in this stretch, Cunningham would have at least had a game where he buried four corner threes.
No, like, he wouldn't have. Did you watch Cunningham this year?
He would have had. He would have his one every 10 games, and if he was off, he wouldn't keep jacking and taking visit. Like living with Mirotic's like living with that John Starks game 7, but it's just every game.
Man.
He's been, come on, Ryan. He's been awful. When he's good, I'll say he's good, but I could just objectively say that he has been bad as of the last couple of weeks, and I hope that changes.
I just like the fact that he never has any expression on his face at all. Mm. I don't know. Is it the beard that's masking just a plethora of emotion, or is he really just always stone-faced?
Yeah, it's all hidden by the beard. Yeah, no, I mean, look, like I said, I'll be right there when he gets good again, and there was games where, you know, he definitely helps out. Coincidentally, they were all against terrible teams. You look at his best games since he came over, Brooklyn, Detroit, Dallas, and Sacramento. I mean, those are literally his best games, and it's against all the dog crap teams. So when he has a game, a good game against a good team, I will say it is a good game, but just honestly speaking, I have nothing against him. I couldn't care less about the human factor. As a basketball player, he has not been playing well, but yes, I guess maybe he's better than Dante Cunningham.
You're just a hater. A hater. All right, so make your prediction. Do you want to talk about OKC? Like, is there anything new to say about OKC?
Just, I mean, they're going through a crazy stretch right now, and I will maintain what I've been saying for months. If they don't make that Carmelo trade, this is a team that's fighting. I think they're the third seed right now, by a good margin. Like, they've locked in the third seed if they never make that trade for Carmelo. He is so god-awful, and I just... That's the worst move. I mean, like, Steven Adams is a really good player. Like, if he would have just been your third player behind those two studs and a bunch of role players, like, this team would have been 50-plus wins right now. Like, I can't get over how bad Carmelo has been for this team.
You're a hater.
he's the Nikola Mirotic of OKC.
Yeah, and they get to go at San Antonio, at home versus Denver, and come right back and play in New Orleans. And then they go play Golden State, and then they play Houston.
And I was saying the other day that it's crazy that their easiest game in this seven-game stretch is going to be at Golden State. Like, that's insane, but it's true. they're a relentless team. Like, that's why I said I don't think the Cleveland's easier in a vacuum, but, like, we're catching Portland when they just had a physical, emotional game. We're going to be catching Oklahoma City in the middle of a brutal stretch. You got to take advantage of those at home. Cleveland's just harder because, you know, they're not in a stretch like these two. But, yeah, the funniest thing to me is just this narrative that the – I mean, like, I think Andre Roberson is going to get MVP votes the way you hear people talk about how, like, OKC was some juggernaut, and then Roberson goes down, and now all of a sudden they just can't beat anybody. So, yeah, Andre Roberson for MVP.
They're 7-3 in their last 10.
Yeah, I mean, once they really started... So they were 30-20, so that means that since he's gone down, 14-11. They've been a pretty average team.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay, so make a prediction for the three games.
I'm going to go 1-2. I think they lose the Cleveland game, and then it's just hard for me them beating both Portland and OKC, so I think they split that. So I think they go 1-2. Right before their stretch gets a little easier.
I'm going 1-2 as well. I'm just giving in. Whatever you pick is what I'm picking.
And what about, I mean, if Curry is going to be out for that series,
mm-hmm. It's
absolutely insane to say that you'd rather... Is there any team that you would prefer to play Golden State instead of... You know, one of the other teams, let's say you're guaranteed Curry's out for the series. Does that make Golden State less scary than any other team, or would you still say, no, I want literally any other team in the West except for Houston even if Golden State's missing Curry.
No, Golden State's still way scarier. Like, they still have three All-Stars. And Durant is still one of the best, you know, four players on the planet.
So you'd rather play Golden State than Utah?
I would rather play Utah than Golden State.
Utah than Golden State, yeah.
Although, like, it's close. Because
I think we'd win more games against Stephless Golden State than against Utah.
I think that's probably true, but I think that's because Stephless Golden State wouldn't give a crap the terrifying thing about Golden State when Steph is on the court is you might have an 18-point lead with, you know, 2 minutes to go in the third quarter because they've been dicking around for the first half. And then Steph is going to be like, all right, I'm going to start killing you now, and you're dead. Like, it's over. And it just depends on how long he waited to start firing at you or if he's having his one out of every 10 bad nights. The Jazz are going to just grind you down and grind you down and grind you down, and I think you're probably right, because without Steph there, Durant isn't that kind of killer. Klay isn't that kind of killer. You'll probably have a game where Klay scores 872 points on you in 3 seconds, and you'll look like a complete fool, but the Jazz would probably be more relentless. So, yeah, I would agree with that. I still wouldn't want to play the Golden State Warriors less than I'd want to play the Jazz.
Yeah.
The Jazz are clearly the third best team in the league. And if I was the Warriors or the Rockets, I'm desperately hoping the Jazz climb up to seven to six or to five.
Yeah.
Like, who wants to play those guys in a seven-game series and then have to go on to another team? It's just, ugh.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm honestly at a point right now where you give me any seed but eight and I'm happy. Like, I don't think they're going to beat anybody. I think they could win just as many games against the Warriors as they could Portland or, you know, whoever. I wouldn't even mind a Utah series just because I'd get to go to some games or whatever. But, yeah, just avoid the eight because Houston is going to demolish the Pelicans if they were to meet in a series. So at this point, avoid the eight, and I am totally happy. The only two things I want to avoid is the eight, and then please don't give me an injury of another player that carries into the offseason. Let's just get eliminated from the playoffs, have Chuck put us on a gone fishing poster, whatever, and then let the guys rest a little bit and then go into the offseason completely healthy, enter training camp with everybody but Boogie obviously healthy, stay that way. Like, that's all I want. I'm not greedy. I'm not asking for a series win. Just let me avoid Houston and let me avoid any other injuries that carry into the offseason.
I don't know when this podcast, you know, turned into a fantasy podcast. That's pretty much what you just described there.
Or just throw all the injuries onto Frank Jackson. Just let him keep getting surgeries. Let him keep getting all the surgeries. Just nobody else get hurt, please.
Poor Frank. Man. All right, so thanks, everybody, for listening to In the Know. And I'm rooting for you, Frank.
For the ones who know that a little late is always too late, and that the clock doesn't stop just because you're missing a part, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, and our KeepStock inventory management solutions help ensure you have the right stuff in the right place at exactly the right time. Visit Grainger.com/KeepStock to learn more. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.